Hello, everyone. Good morning. I'm Alyssa Anderson, a member of the selection committee of the New York Film Festival. With me in person is co-director Verena Paravel. That's okay. And with us, beamed live from China, is J.P. Sniadecki. Hello. Can you see
Hello.
And hear us?
Morning.
Hi.
Where is the camera to see J.P.?
It's up there.
Oh, okay. I want to see. Hi, J.P.
Hey, Verena. Hey, Verena.
How are you?
Good.
I will start off by asking you both a basic question, which is what drew you to film Willets Point? Whoever would like to go first.
You want to go first, JP?
Verena, I think you should begin because you're the one who found it first.
Yeah. So I was trying to make my, this is my first film, and JP's second film, but I was trying to make, I had this dream of making a film underneath the Seven Line, because I, one day I took the train, the Seven train, all the way to Flushing, and I discovered that that was a very interesting space, and also that along the line there were 150 nationalities who lived there. And so I decided to make a film about a walk underneath the subway. So basically I started in Flushing and I started to walk all the way to Times Square. But along my way, like very shortly after Flushing, I discovered this place. And this is what I was telling you, the two first shots of the film are actually, that was the first time I was holding a camera, and this is what I filmed and this is what I saw. And I was totally obsessed by this place. So when I arrived there, I was totally amazed by the space in itself and how it works, the economy of the place, that I, it took me a while to understand how how it was divided and how people were working in the street, and some people were trying to to take the car into a certain shop, and it took me a while to understand all this economy or the ecology of the place. And then so I came back obsessively to this place and to get to know more and more the people and what was going on, and then I learned about the political issue behind the place. And it was not that, it was not because of the political issue, it's just because what was going on there was very fascinating to me, and especially because when you arrive here, you think this is the end of a road. You think this is where people, a car comes to die and people comes to hide, but you see that it's absolutely not the case, that there is like a second life, like it's about recycling, it's about, regenerating, it's about circulation, and also this other dimension of the place, which is, archiving this music. It was like a museum to me. Did I answer?
Yes, absolutely. JP, what would you like to add to what drew you to filming Willets Point?
Well, I was drawn to all of those dimensions that Verena just described to you. And at the time that she was discovering Willets Point, I was actually in China working on another film of 2008, I believe, and she contacted me and said, would you like to come see this place with me? I think we could make an amazing film. And so I said sure, and I got back, it was early September, I think, Raina, and
yeah.
We took the Chinatown bus from Boston and went straight from there on the 7 train to Willets Point, and the visual and aural impression of the space just absolutely captivated me. And I've been in junkyards, and I've never seen a junkyard like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also very interested in urban communities as special units, and this one just had so many very unique, extraordinary qualities to it that I couldn't help but want to film. And then Verena and I, both of us having never collaborated before, had this really natural, organic collaboration where the camera passed between the two of us, and ideas of how to go about approaching the space just seemed to fall all in the right place. Mm-hmm. And so we just continued working hard for over 2 years to film it.
Mm-hmm. There's a really great moment when the gentleman who's talks about racing cars, he'll only race for an amount of 3,000, and he says, I hope you get a good grade out of this. So what was the response of many of the people that you encountered who work in Willets Point when you explained to them your project? Were they wary? Were they supportive?
So we had very various responses. Some of them didn't care at all, and the camera never, I'm not going to say that the camera didn't exist, but was almost part of our body. We were this cyborg with this camera because, we were always hanging out for sometimes 10 hours a day, always with our camera, from the beginning, from day one to the end.
And this was a two-year process, JP said.
It was a two-year process. And we were always hanging there in the snow, in the rain, all the time. So the camera was part of our body. And so some people never ask a single question. And it was solely almost natural to be there. Mm-hmm. It was just there. Some other people, I think, were worried because there are also people who are maybe doing not totally legal things in this place. So, but we never ask permission to film with anybody. Maybe JP, you can also respond differently. I'm not talking on behalf of the two of us, but I have this thing that for me, as soon as you see someone with the camera, there is a camera here and here and here. If I don't want to be on camera, I can react to that and I can say, no, don't film me. So this is the way I want to do. And so there were a couple of people who clearly didn't want to have their face on camera, but maybe only two. And there is 2,000 people working there. Mm. And only 2 person felt that they didn't want to be on camera for good reason, I guess. And otherwise, I think, of course, that some people were also thinking that we were there to convey maybe a more political dimension of what they were going through. And these, they have been under attack for 40 years. And mm-hmm. so it was a way, I guess, to have a voice, or at least to have a face, to mm-hmm. exist, to mm-hmm. be there. And I think they were really happy about that. And we never, clearly say, it's not going to be, for those who were interested in what we were doing, we would never say, it's going to be a political thing. It's a film about the experience of being there. Mm-hmm. It's a film about, we share this experience of being there with you and what it is to live and to work in this junkyard. And there is no way we're going to focus directly. And so we were really following what they feel we needed. Some Joe was constantly trying to drag us along his, it was walking very fast all the time and going from one shop to another shop and trying to get people to talk about what was going on. And we follow him. But he's doing that every day, every mm-hmm. single day, with or without us, with or without the camera. He's doing that all the time. And so we were following. We were taking, Julia is begging every day. So she took us on her journey to beg. And she's doing that every single day. Mm-hmm. And so we were just following what the camera was triggering you know, the camera triggers something all the time. And so we were just there to collect this moment without, you know, I don't know if I answer correctly, but
JP. Oh, no, absolutely. JP?
I would just add that, you know, like Verena is saying, this is this place that actually cameras are there quite often. People of different, you know, journalists, other filmmakers go there. So Chop Shop was made in the same space. So there is a kind of relationship to the camera that some people have. The people who didn't want to be on our camera, of course, we respected that, and we did not shoot them. But for the most part, you know, there was a number of people who we developed relationships with. And so the film, as Verena was saying, was made more with them rather than being about those particular people. It was a film that was made with their their cues, sort of cueing our way of interacting with the space and with them.
Are there questions from the audience? Yes.
Have any of the people that you filmed seen this movie yet?
Oh, the question is, have any of the people they filmed, have they seen Foreign Parts yet?
So we wanted to show them the film first thing in the world, we wanted to show it to them. So we had to finish the film this summer in a hurry. And they're going to see the film Saturday night on a chop shop, in the junkyard. I'm taking care of organizing a screening there in a chop shop.
This Saturday?
This coming Saturday. And it's going to be either in the diner that you see, or in the chop shop. I mean, they are kind of fighting to have the film in their chop shop. So I think we will maybe screen it in the diner, so it's a more neutral space, and it's not, because they want the film in there. So they're gonna see the film this coming Saturday, right before the public screening.
It's a very nice film. I want to, you know, I don't know if you know about the Flatlands, used to be like that, and there's also the Hunts Point Market that pretty much have a similar feel, except for what the Queens and Wilkes Point area completely feels like a community, where in those other areas, they're a little more spread out. Very, very good job. I really enjoyed the film.
Thank you.
Jim.
You've made visible this sort of underground culture that other people have gone and photographed, and there's some consciousness, but the way you've done it is you really do show the sense of community. But my question has to do with the impact of making someone visible and how they perform for you. Reality television and tabloid newspapers, which these people watch and read, and sort of give them a role model of how they're supposed to act out in front of the camera. So when you are in the editing room and making choices about what to keep in and what, you know, what is performance and what is authentic, you know, those kinds of questions, I'm very much, if you could both talk about that.
Yeah. I think the performance in front of a camera is totally part of, we allow ourselves to also to be on camera, because most of this, what the so-called observational film are, you know, trying to be this, how do they say, the fly on the wall, but also all this film where there is no filmmaker, pretending no filmmaker behind the camera, is also a film with there is a structuring absence, the absence of the filmmaker. And we obviously didn't want to do a film like that. And also we wanted to let the performance. At some point, some people mentioned that, you know, there were like a certain, yeah, that's true, that sometimes Joe is performing, and sometimes those guys smoking drugs, they are also performing. But this is what a camera is doing. And this, for us, I think this is also part of what we think a film should be. also to capture what the camera trigger, and it's also, you know, for us there is no, I think it's more interesting to include that on the film because it's also part of what is the film and what is filmmaking, to deal with this moment where, you know, the camera is there, it's a presence, it's a character, as well as the rest of the... but maybe, JP, you should ask something and I can add something to what you say.
I agree with that. I mean, the transparency that you're talking about, or attempt towards a kind of self-reflexive film that draws attention to the actual creation of the documentary itself, the film itself, is a part of our approach. I mean, we knew that from the beginning. And then, as anthropologists, this notion of performativity, of performing one's identity as it is shaped by media representations or notions of the sort of what it means to be masculine, what it means to be feminine in these kinds of spaces, or kind of the imaginative life of the individuals and the friends that we had there, was something that we found to be really valuable. It might come off, and for a very surface reading, as just a kind of acting for the camera, but it actually gives deeper insight into the lived experience and the sort of, like I said, imaginative life of our friends there and of the people we worked with.
Mm-hmm. I'm very curious to know more about the relationship that Joe, who, as I understand, is the only, if maybe one of the only actual residents of Willets Point.
He is the only official. Yeah, some people live in the junkyard, but
he's the only official.
He's the
resident.
Only official.
Born and raised in Willets Point.
Yeah.
What is his relationship like with the shop owners and the workers?
Want to answer, JP?
I think Joe is as many things in the space. I mean, he's done so many things. He used to run a bar there. He lives above the diner. He plays many different roles in this space. I think in this current moment right now, he's in many ways a kind of glue, like Julia is the glue, but in a different way. He's a glue that holds a lot of the people together. He's sort of a vehicle for transporting information, especially sort of activist information, to get people up and going to sort of stand up against the EDC plan. And he's also, in some ways, kind of this is the word that comes to mind, is like an icon or something slightly heroic. You know, when he walks down the street, as he's walking, people say, hey Joe, how you doing? And, you know, he gives a sort of an arm up in the air like he's fighting the good fight. So
the mayor of Willets
Point.
There
is a kind of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said the mayor of Willets Point.
Yeah, the mayor of Willets Point. So there's a kind of solidarity that he creates, you know?
Yeah, I would just add that also, I mean, I agree with what JP said, and also maybe like a figure as of the father, something like that, is he has this love not only for the place but also for everybody there, and he has a way to talk to them. I'm always very moved. I don't know how to describe that, but there are many different people in the junkyard, and some of them are not totally there. I mean, they sometimes, I don't know how to say that, like, in politically correct way, like how do you describe, but he has this very, he has this really like a love for those people, and mm-hmm. he's like this solid figure, you know, mm-hmm. of the place, where he knows things, and mm-hmm. people would go and see him to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's. I think that's totally right. There's a number of lost souls in the junkyard, and he's quite a kind of caretaker or a confidant to a lot mm-hmm. of those individuals, no matter how sort of down and out they might be at the time.
Mm-hmm. There are other questions. Yes.
Compositionally, you have all these tracking shots from behind. I mean, even the dog you have tracked from behind. Was this something you had thought about at the very start of the film? And it also feels a lot like the Dardenne brothers, you know, the way they kind of shoot people from behind, just constantly moving. This was an aesthetic decision you had made even before you began?
Yeah. So that's very interesting that you... I'm going to answer for myself. But at the very beginning of the film, so we were started shooting, and then as we were shooting, we were trying to understand how to enter this space. How do you, you know, penetrate the space, and how do you understand the space? and all this decision, we were there shooting what was going on here, sitting mostly, you know, as anthropologists, like sitting for one whole day, like having lunch with the worker and everything. But there was this dimension of circulation and, you know, migration, like all the things that circulate in the junkyard, like the money, the cars, the drugs, the, you know, the DVD people, Chinese people selling DVD, all these things that's, you know, like fluid and moving. And also one of the things from the very beginning that was very important for us was to give equal attention to the parts and to the human being. Mm-hmm. And that was because that was very important for us to do that, that the parts are also like a very important dimension of this space. And one way, like if it was more theoretical at the beginning, say, why don't we track those parts, like going from one place to the other, like removing, recycling, going from one place to the other, and one, why do we track those people going through the junkyard, Joe, as this, when he's walking like that in his in with his rent, and Julia begging, and all this movement. So at the beginning, that was a theoretical things, but and actually we tried to edit the thing at the beginning with like just doing that, but it didn't work because we couldn't really grasp. So it stayed a little bit on the film, but it's, you know, at the beginning we had this idea of, yes, of following, just like taking, you know, the following the movement, like just to grab this movement. This place actually is not all about movement. It's also about stacking, like archiving, keeping, holding. So, and then we balance also between. But this is true that at the beginning we had this this idea of following, to be there, following the actor, the parts of even the dog, like we were following them. That's true.
JP, do you have anything to add?
No, you answered wonderfully, Verena.
Okay. Other questions? Yes, just wait for the microphone.
I live in the neighborhood nearby and get my auto parts there when necessary, so it's familiar to me. So I immediately see the 7 train in Citi Field and know exactly where it is. But you don't get, you hold all the contextual information to that very end. So why not more context at the beginning, or have that the scroll with the facts and information at the beginning, or even a map or anything to anyone else who doesn't instantly look at Citi Field and know what it is and know the whole history of the new state, et cetera, but you don't provide any background for anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Answer first, JP?
Well, we do provide background, yes, and it comes at the end of the film, and I think, you know, the reason we're structuring it in that way is that our first priority is to have a kind of a piece of cinema that allows for an experience that is not necessarily sort of foregrounded by text, but through a kind of sensorial engagement with the space, and allow the viewer to begin to build their understanding of the space that sort of, in many ways, is genuine to our experience of the place, because we did not go there thinking of it with the political backdrop, of course, that is in our film, and that, you know, that's an important thread through the film. But we wanted to make a film that was also somehow mimicking our own understanding and discovery of the place through the lens of the camera and the microphone.
Can I add something?
Yeah.
Please. And also, I think by providing, you know, the, I guess you're talking about the political context of the place, but by providing that at the beginning, you would create an expectation that would be a film about only this dimension. And also, I think we wanted to avoid, I mean, it's just like avoiding, but as JP said, it's a film about the experience of being there, and it's not a film that is expository, as you could see, where we wanted to finger point, because we know this kind of film already. We know perfectly the kind of film we could have done with, you know, like going to see the poor worker that are going to lose their space and then go to see the people from the Economic Development Corporation and then, you know, doing these things that we know. But we, since we already know this film, we didn't have to make, fortunately, we didn't have to do this film. So we could make another film and just to show them and give them a face and make them visible. I mean, it's not even that, but and we wanted also, of course, to let them, you know, exist on the film without our voice to tell the viewer what to think, or but just, you know, empower the viewer with the freedom to see by themselves and to understand the situation gradually by themselves. And this is why also at the beginning of the film you don't even know where you are, and it's a choice, it's a, like a real serious choice to do that, like to be a little bit disoriented and say, where are we? And then slowly, gradually, you enter this space. It's an experience. It's not about saying, you know, there is this poor guy who's working there and he's going to lose his job, he's going to lose his space, and there are these people from the city who targeted this place and who has been, you know, neglected this place for 40 years in order to get this place to be able to redevelop, etc., etc. Because this we know, and I think this is more interesting to enter the story, the ecology of the place with this, you know, by the sense, by, you know, trying to understand what is going on, and
we have time for one last question.
Two questions.
Am I missing someone in the back? Yes, this gentleman.
Thank you for taking my question. The automobile as a sort of symbol and an iconographic image in America is very, very powerful. I'm wondering how you considered that iconography when you were putting the film together as individuals and as artists, what your relationship to that is. And also, this seems a very American community, and yet you've titled the film Foreign Parts, and I'm wondering why the choice to put that word in the title when it seems like a very American domestic sort of community.
For Foreign Parts, and you said that it was it sounds like a very American, I mean, I didn't
understand. No, I'm sorry, the community that you're describing seems very American, even though it's full of different races and ethnicities, and but it is an American community, and I'm wondering why you chose the title Foreign Parts to describe what is essentially a domestic community in America.
Yeah.
And then also the iconography of the automobile and your sort of relationship to that.
So Foreign Parts, I mean this is an American community, but most of the worker, like I would say 80% of them are, you know, from Latin America, and most of them are illegal. I would say that 80% of them don't speak English. So Foreign Parts for that, Foreign Parts for the reference to the cars parts, Foreign Parts because I am a Foreign Parts too. I'm foreigner, I'm a stranger, as Louis say when he sees me, a stranger. I'm a stranger. Foreign Parts. Somebody told me that Foreign Part could be also like a reference, like a sexual reference. I don't know. Somebody tell me that. And I think there is a sexual dimension to, like, and talking about automobile, and there is all this poster of naked woman lying on, rims and tire and beautiful cars. So Yeah, I mean, I am not actually the person who should answer. I mean, I think I am the one who chose the title at the beginning, but I'm a foreigner, so I don't understand this thing about language, actually. So maybe, JP, you have a better answer than me. And for the car, I don't know if I'm going to answer correctly, but for us, you know, we could have, at some point, we were really, I remember in our footage, we have a lot of, like, very destroyed car, like, totally, you know, super, it's really sad. I mean, when you see those cars, you feel, and there is still this doll in them, there is still, like, blood, and we just decided to remove that at the end. It was too much. I mean, we push away a little bit all the pathos and everything. So they are like, sometimes they are, you know, floating in the air as a symbol also, of course, you know, America and the relationship with car. So we try to, and here it's fragmented, but also, you know, we go from the parts to the whole. And the place work like that too, you know, these parts and those this whole. And the community works like that too. Those shops works only because they are a body. It's like a body. It's like an organism. If you remove one, they cannot survive without the other. They all compete against each other, but they all function because of the other. This is really a body. This is, and the car function exact. So it's mechanic, organic. It's really this, you know, an allegory of that also. And this is why the question for them is actually not to be like erased from this place. It's the question of relocation that is more important for them. Relocate us somewhere else so we can be together and we can continue to function. If you, you know, if you take us apart, we don't exist anymore, like a car, like a body.
JP, do you have anything to add about the choice of the title and the iconography of the car?
Well, I mean, yeah, the automobile, the car, as we said, the relationship between the growth of American capitalism and the automobile is a very interconnected one. And you also have here a model of a place that is, I mean, it's an amazing model of free market capitalism that is going to be ripped out, like a foreign part might be ripped out of something, you know, a foreign part also has a medical sense of sort of foreign body or a foreign entity that you want to extract. It's going to be ripped out. For the sake of corporate capitalism, which is, you know, our film is also to some degree a critique of that. So foreign parts, the title is, like I said, it has this sort of like anatomical kind of meaning as well, in addition to all the meanings that Verena is talking about. And the iconography of the automobile in some ways is just sort of like, where does the detritus and the refuse and the rejects of the way that capitalism is developing, where do they go? Well, they go here, and this is how they're dealt with.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. But Verena and JP, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.